All right. Well, the title is slightly changed now. It's because people tell me that you better have a title which better reflects what you're going to talk. Okay, it's a closure solution to Pronto's boundary layer theory of wall bounding determined flow. And she stand up and say hello to everybody. And Patrick Wu, and he's over here. And he is more responsible for theoretical, you see theoretical, a lot of theoretical formulas, this is he did, and a lot of graphs is he did. All right, so, and Fasley and University of Houston. All right, the, so I'd like to also briefly thank to NSF China and the Minister of Science and Technology who actually funded this research for the last almost 10 years. So it's an effort for 10 years, and now concluded, and my university, and I should put here UCLA too, because UCLA also had actually supported this, and also KITP, because the last very, since my last informal talk, that the two main results is obtained, so this is a happy news. And this is a, this year that, last year actually, we published a paper in the Academia Meccanica Sinica, which is about the basic ideas, it's a new perspective in statistical modeling of wall-bounded turbulence. And so the type of turbulence we're going to talk about is the, well, the wall. You see the high the resolutions, high resolution simulations, and this is a Moyin, Wu and Moyin simulation. Actually, we will actually talk a lot about this simulation data too. So here is the two basic flow, channel and a pipe. So just define the notation here, x and y vertical direction, z, and as usual direction, theta will be equivalent to z, and x is x, and r will be equivalent to y. So this is to define the notation here. All right. So what is the Pronto's? So I like to briefly mention 3 points why Pronto boundary layer theory is important. Well, theoretically, I'm an applied mathematician that this is one of the biggest story in the 20th century in applied mathematics is boundary layer theory. And I go to textbook that the inner solution, outer solution, and the matching, and this is, goes everywhere. Okay, and also his empirical part, the log law, is amazingly accurate for flat plate wall-bounded flow. Amazingly accurate. So that has actually been very much used in industrial application of CFD. It's all the turbulence models have to be calibrated against the log law. And an enormous amount of parameters will be have to fit with this. So now, this is also leads to the fact that if we have a quantitative theory for the Pronto boundary layer theory, that's going to affect the CFD enormously too. All right. So theoretically, so I adopt the Millikan's description of the inner solution, outer solution matching. The inner solution is with a wall velocity normalized. And outer solution, there are two ways of doing things. One is just to scale velocity with the central velocity. Another is to take the difference of the central velocity, again, scale with the wall velocity. So the two different scale, they have the argument that goes along and actually have power law and a log law. And that is the, this is a Millikan 1938. It's already laid out two possibilities here. So we have to choose. Actually, I would say that the latest our rough wall result support log law, in the sense that log law is fully consistent, and this has a problem, has an internal problem. So okay, the reason is that if you take the roughness, it changes only the wall. How much it changes to the whole entire flow? And it does change the entire outer layer floor, and so the consistency, this consistency seems to be better than this consistency in a sense. All right, so here we have another heuristic derivation of log law. Heuristic derivation of log law goes with momentum balance equation, and And the closure assumption says that this is a closure term, Reynolds stress, as expressed in terms of UDY, with LM square, which is the mixing length. And that mixing length near the wall in the region of almost constant stress is proportional to the distance from the wall. That's a physical model. That's a physical model. And this is also a physical quantity. So that immediately replaces it to this equation with dominant balance, get a log law. So however, it's interesting to think that the two derivation, this derivation here, and the physical heuristic derivation cannot be combined. You go either one. In the textbook, in the courses, terminal courses, some professor like to talk about log law this way, some like the other way.
There are two more ways to derive
it. Yeah, but actually, is there a way to think about a unified way? I mean, so is there a good connection? There must be a good connection behind that. But it's not on the surface. It's not on the surface. Now here, we actually try to combine this. Okay. So I have comments on the log law is that firstly, it's a partial description, only for the overlap zone, all right? Secondly, the problem is that how to connect to the wall and how to connect to the outside weak. Well, these are empirically wall function and weak model. Those come later for the engineer models. But I think this connection is more interesting for two reasons. One, the change of the wall condition, such as we do the manipulation on the wall or rough wall, this will make a drag reduction. And that's the whole point to the engineers. And also the flow separation is a big problem now today with safety calculation. With flow separation is to have an adverse pressure gradient near the wall to drive the flow back. And if you ignore the wall, that is everything. So here, I think the connection is important. Secondly, the weak. Actually, I think the weak present the problem of turbulence. Because the outside of bulk flow is a coherent flow in the presence of turbulence. How do you determine the coherent flow in presence of turbulence? That's the whole point. If you ignore that, oh, weak, I do a model, but you don't do anything. So that's the whole thing, that the wall part and the bulk flow part is the essential thing, and we claim that we actually obtain a unified method to overcome these two obstacles. Here is the sort of big news. Okay, on the other hand, the further development from log law that empirically, I just mentioned you two work, is JFM Nichols 2004. This is the Nichols two-layer model. Look, this is the log law here. And near the wall, there is this Taylor expansion function up to the order 4, and with an exponential function behind. It's amazingly accurate, I have to tell you. Amazingly accurate, but it's empirical, okay? Just an expansion. And the weak, this is the weak model. Also very accurate. If you compare this, by the way, there is a very slight changes that Nichols made adjustment between the channel flow, which is open, which is a closed wall flow, and the open flow, the turbine boundary layer. Turbine boundary layer is open flow, that there's infinity condition out there, and there's zero pressure gradient, and only the flow drags this way. Okay, there's just a minor adjustment here and there to switch from the inner pipe channel to outer boundary layer. It's a remarkable, but it's an empirical fitting, is it? Another one is by Monkowitz and others in Physical Fluids 2007 that used the Paley approximant to model this the gradient, and with two terms. One is horribly written this way. Another is horribly written. Well, a Paley approximate, for those who are not in applied mathematics, maybe a little scared by the word, essentially by the ratio of the two rational functions, that's two polynomials, that's all. And with the fitting this B1, B2, B3, and generate, I don't know, 5-3 digits of numbers out there. It's accurate. But it's only accurate for the range of fitting they do. there's no power to the extrapolation. That's the problem. And in fact, it extrapolated to the, for example, they did this for data or for the experimental data for the certain Reynolds number of some 10,000 to 100,000, some range. But that does not describe the DNS down the lower Reynolds number end. Just mention that this, you see, this is all recent, 2004, 2007. So it's still an effort of doing. This is talk about a profile over the old region. Okay, this is not just a log. All right, so it's a development. Okay, but at the same time, physical models begin to emerge. People, physicists, want to also model it and do a profile. And I just mentioned this two work. It's PRL 2008, Lavov, Prokatia, and Rosenko, and now we'll later refer to LPR model. And also GGGC, PRL 2010, that's what Goldenfeld has talking about. But he did not present that in detail 2 weeks ago. But this is the but this is very qualitative, and I don't want to comment too much about it. But the model of LPR deserves a few words here. Three features. One is the physical modeling of fluctuations using length scale. They begin to take into account the effects of fluctuation on the mean, but specify through certain length scale, and we do the same thing too. This is the same as what we do. Secondly, the model is qualitative. It just gives the formulas too, all right? But the formula come from also some fitting of the land, how the length scale depend on space, just ad hoc. So that's why, but they have arrows near the wall and the center, and we correct that. But thirdly, it's intuitive. Intuitive is that this the function, length function comes from just the inspect the DNS data and just and take formula and that's it. All right? But we do systematically. So I'll just describe how we do systematically. And so we can do both channel and pipe. And LPR claim, the title of the paper is that universal formula for channel and pipe. All right, the same formula for channel and pipe. But we'll see that they are different. Why the book flow is different? The geometry is different. How can they be the same? All right? So we'll be pointing out the difference between the channel and pipe, and also smooth wall and rough wall. The analysis also is being extended to turn boundary layer now, open flow. I mean, it's the same, absolutely the same thing to go. So we actually can talk about compressibility effects and everything. So we're trying to do something systematic here. All right, so what we do? Okay. Major assumption is this, is the multi-layer assumption, which comes from a philosophical view about non-equilibrium system. Non-equilibrium steady state is generically composed of multiple states of varying symmetry. That's the big statement. So combined to come to the concrete wall turbulence is wall boundary flow is composed of multiple layers with distinct local scaling. That's the basic assumption. So that is generally consistent with the common view of viscous sublayer and the buffer layer, log layer, and the weak. Generally consistent, but try to be more specific. We try to ask a specific question, how to identify the transition point, first, the layers, and how to characterize the local scaling and the transition between the layers. That's the whole fundamental theoretical questions. And that gets the resolution in this work now. So how we do? Now, let's make a big claim first. So what's the result at the end? The claim is that we obtain an analytical form of Prandtl's boundary layer solution of wall boundary turbulence, wall boundary turbulence flow, channel, pipe, and soon TBL. It's constructed based on the generalized Lie group analysis. The Lie group analysis is generalized so that we can characterize multiple scaling states, not just the one, and the transition between them. So there's a line theoretical component of that behind this. We postulate a generalized invariant, and all we could say we discover this invariant, whatever. So this is theoretically, and then application, that how we get. We get accurate quantitative description of channel flow solution for all Reynolds number, more accurate than LPR model. And this is what I announced at last year in November in the APS meeting. We obtained that before arrived here. But this, the last 2 weeks, we got the two new newses. So this is what I like to share with you people that achieve the quantitative description of pipe flow from DNS, all the way from DNS, about the Reynolds-Hilbert RE-1000. This is Wu and Moyne, to Princeton super pipe experiments, Reynolds-Hilbert up to 500,000. So that's the whole range. The whole range is combined together now. And we discovered, actually, a different bulk flow for the pipe. 1 minus z to the power 5 instead of 1 minus z to the 4 for channel. So the bulk flow is different. Now this different function, 1 minus z to the power n, is one of the generalized Lie group solution. So the number 5 and 4 today is still somehow empirical. It's just the empirical recognition. It's a parameter. I haven't worked out the way to fix it. But the clear, we will show you the evidence that why one is minus z4 and one is minus z5. Just to switch that have a new, has a very, very important prediction, is that the given the same Reynolds number, take the pipe and the channel, can you ask the question, what is the difference between the central velocity near the center of the pipe? Now the prediction is with this difference is 10%, and that is confirmed. And which is everywhere, but people notice and try to ignore and notice and ignore. 10% differences. Okay, so finally, this is another happy news, and the news that I haven't got at my last informal discussion, only after Nigel left. And I actually showed two preliminary graphs to him, but after he left, we got a complete story. So this is a very quick story, a quantitative description of the rough wall now, of Nick Ross data, as well as Princeton rough wall data, too. Princeton rough wall data is about Reynolds number, a factor of 50 or 100 larger than the Nick Ross data. But the wall is a little bit different. We discovered a slight different action of the wall with 10% of some distance which will need to be confirmed experimentally. The wall that Princeton made slight different way than Nick Ross made. The rough wall is different. But the data, I'll show you that it works very well. And we discover a new scaling function. The function different from Nick Ross, different from Pronto, different from everybody. And I'll show you how they work. And we have analytic prediction of this scaling function. It's not just a fitting, it's just a collapsing. Collapsing to what? What's the physical meaning? And why is this function? And how is this function works? It's all described. So this is interesting, exciting news at the end. Before, I still want to talk about, put that in the perspective, is that which will be done maybe in the next seminar or next seminar, is that here is with the quantitative description of the complete profile. Now we can say, we can talk, discuss what if I change something in the wall, how do you affect the outside? For example, the drag. Every engineer care about drag reduction. Actually, this is the drag reduction amount, and that is the wall layer changes. And you will see that 20%, 30%, what does it mean 20%, 30%, or 40% of drag reduction?
What do you mean the wall change? So
this is the horizontal coordinate. This is a wall parameter. Parameter is the thickness of the sublayer with one of the fundamental parameter in our problem.
When this is not effectively.
No. This is just how much you alter this layer.
It's a measure of roughness. What is it?
It's a measure of actually the degree of laminarization. If people do a drag reduction experiments, they have to make the near the wall more laminar than it used to be. And that laminarization can be translated into the very.
But what are the physical parameters of this?
It's the thickness, sublayer thickness. Sublayer thickness is altered. And here we describe that. And so this will be something talk more in the future. The second point I'd like to put in implication is that I think what the success here implies that we take care encounter the effects of fluctuations on the mean in a proper way. And the idea can be generalized to other problems and can incorporate a more detailed analysis of multi-point statistics. At this point, we only did single-point statistics, single point. But it's not so hard to do the multi-point either. But it lay out a single point, there is a framework, there is a constraint out there. So this is a second, so this will be exciting to do. And number three, the theory developed here works side by side with DNS data. So it provides a systematic way to analyze DNS data. So we have tons of gigabytes and terabytes of DNS data there. And people don't know what to calculate. They calculate energy spectrum, they calculate correlation function, they calculate triple point correlation function, they calculate the energy dissipation. And by the way, the profile I'm going to use, but how that calculation has improved our understanding of the different profile. That's the key, because at the end is the mean quantity or stably measurable quantity, which is our interest. Nusselt number is a stably measurable quantity. It must be a mean. Okay, so now we are doing, this is our compressible turbulent boundary layer in Mach number 6. We're taking analysis on this and work with theory, and it worked very well with the theory. Finally, the theory is going to provide a guide to develop future CFD, and this will be, because I'm taking these to a project including 40 people in China, and so we're developing these kind of computing engines. So I'm not bluffing. Okay, finally, what do we have done? A few words about the theory. We deal with balance equations, so equation is an essential thing. Equation derived from Navier-Stokes equation describing the basic conservation property. We have mean momentum balance and we have the mean energy balance. This is the equation we have to deal with. So we talk about solving the equation. All right. Now, I'm solving the equation with a generalized similarity solution. I only want to find a generalized similarity solution in the sense that solution which can be mapped from one Reynolds number to other Reynolds number can be mapped. If I know the solution at the one Reynolds number, I will able to tell what's the solution at the other Reynolds number. I think this is what the engineer really like to have, is that to map to the real case. And astrophysics too. I do this computation here. How can I see about the computation out there in the galaxy? That's a there is a similarity transformation here. So we're talking about, the thing is, the point I want to make is that if I request my solution to be self-similar, to be not self-similar, sorry, satisfy some generalized similarity property, that will come back, put in constraint on what kind of form of the profile I get. This is the central point. To translate the similarity in a constructive way to determine the solution. So this is why I put highlights as generalized similarity, the solution. Okay. Now a word of SED, this is the abbreviation of the structural ensemble dynamics. Why I'm always introducing these three words. This is aimed at constructing a theory of for describing statistical state, only statistical state, of a non-equilibrium system. That system involving strong coupling to multi-scale fluctuation dynamics. So in the description I will do here, it must be, it's essential to balance, to connect my momentum balance equation to the energy balance equation. Because the energy balance equation has all the fluctuating dynamics in it. That's very important. So that's also to seek the consistency in the theory to see whether power law or log law or something. Without connecting to any deep fluctuations that stay just at the momentum level, you can see either way. You can see either way. Okay, so that comes to, you see, I already stated that it's a local scaling state. Now, then about order function. This is the most important concept in the theory. It's an extension of order parameter. What order function here is displays. That is the quantity that displays the similarity behavior of the statistical state, originated from the effects of the fluctuations on the mean. That's a theoretic object. And you will see it's essential because people usually do Lie group just on velocity. The velocity itself is not a good similarity variable. you have to choose the right variable to do the Lie group analysis. And you have to choose the right equation to do the Lie group analysis. That's the two central points. All right. So let's talk about the equation now. Mean momentum equation. This is everybody recognized. Navier-Stokes equation. All right. Average. So in the channel and the pipe, these two things goes away. You left with, you move this to the other side of the equation. That is the pressure gradient, integrated once. So you see this is a viscous term, and that is Reynolds stress. All right. So you rewrite this to be tau, and you normalize it with wall unit. You got this become u du dy. You have to change this to d, okay, not to be partial, sorry. You guys have to be rigorous on that. Okay, du dy, and this, I'll call this to be s, and that is the w. So that will be the later notation I'll come to use. Yeah, s will be the shear stress, viscous shear stress, and w will be the Reynolds stress. They make a total stress. The total stress has a very simple structure in the Y. It's just linear in the Y for both pipe and channel. In the channel, the Y is just a distance r. So it's 1 minus r. 1 minus r. So we actually use another variable, z, later. 1 minus y will be equal to z. Z will be the distance from the center. And so in pipe will be r. Z will be r, all right? Okay, so this is the energy equation. Now you can write down all this, this is for compressible. You write the expression for, compressibility is ignored. Rho is gone. So this is incompressible, but it's good for also for the open boundary layer too. But for the channel, the C goes away. There's no mean transport. So you have P, T, pi, and epsilon balances. P is the production, and this is turbine transport, and this is pressure transport, and this is dissipation. By the way, dissipation, I put all this two terms together. Usually people take this term only. That's a mistake. Actually, you should put two, we must put it together. Okay, just a quick word about how people used to do the Lie group analysis. This is, you see the Oberlack JFM 2001 and Landgren JFM 2004. It's a pretty recent thing. People begin to consider how the Lie group similarity analysis can tell us anything about the wall-bounded turbulence. So take this Navier-Stokes equation again. Just to perform a stretching, a dilation, translation group on it. This is a big group here. And then look for possible invariant. Now this is, I cross this out because viscosity, let's not translate it, just to look at a space. This is space y, and this is velocity u. Just take these two similarity variables, you're going to solve this equation. This is the linearized Lie group, and it will give you the invariant x from this equation. And it turns out that by switch a1, a3, a1, a4, you can generate the log power law, exponential. You can generate this local solution. So this form, analytical form, will be invariant under the stretching transformation or translation several groups if you move in the Y vertically. In the Y, you stretch it or you move, translate it, you can move velocity in some group and they are locally invariant. Now this, we're going to use also very strong fact that power law is generically a local scaling state. All right, so this is a simple invariant analysis. Now we do something different. The apparatus is very good. There are four essential tips in our theory. Tip number one, don't perform the primitive variable u because it's not a good variable. U is integrated of the s. S is the shear. It's the integration. There are a lot of things messed up in the u. You can't see clearly all the local scaling. Only order function will display the local scaling clearly through the whole range. That's the number key number one.
So what is order?
Order function is so far is a buzzy word.
Huh?
Mixing length is one. Oh, I'll immediately come to the question. What is order function? Okay.
Mixing length is an invention. It's an approximation.
Wait a second.
There is no equation for mixing length.
You will come. You will come. Second, number two, don't transform primitive equation. It's the same thing as in in this is applied mathematics stuff. You have a complicated equation P plus T plus C plus equal to epsilon. There will always be a dominant balance in some local regions. Now, if you do a stretching group on the whole term, some just missed it. You don't see it because the dominant term, you highlight that. So what we do, you have to do the approximate equation with dominant balance term. Now that, people will say, how do I know it? If I don't know it, how do I? But if you don't know it, you can't do a theory, that's all. You have to know the dominant balance. So that's important. So if you do this, you do the equation, you do the approximate dominant balance equation, and that's what the inner solution, outer solution generates. The inner solution is this two term dominant. Outer solution is this two term dominant. This is our usual textbook teaching. Third creative point here is that mixing length is one of our old functions. I'll explain why. Mixing length function not only involves itself, and also it's a spatial gradient. Spatial gradient as important as itself. So we do a prolonged Lie group analysis. So it's not just Lie group, it's have to go to the prolonged space, which allow us to get additional invariant, which is so important. Number four, when we get this to this step, that we postulate the relation between the two invariant. We have not only the invariant for the length, mixed length, but also we have an invariant for the spatial gradient. And it turns out, in the simple case, that the two things are related linearly in the usual law, but if we postulate a nonlinear relation, then we actually can describe a smooth transition from one scaling state to another. Once this is possible, you find a global invariant, which is good at one single state, and also good at another single state, and also good at every point in the space in that transition. And that global invariant actually, it turns out to be also good for every layers. So you have the global invariant for the whole range, and that's theoretically we are doing the business. All right. So you see this equation here, balance equation, energy balance equation, and you see this graph in the Pope's book and everywhere, that is balance term, this is a law, war units, and this is a different terms. You see this cross point here? People noticed that for a long time, right? Now here is, these are the critical point, which separate different layers, okay? So separation between layers are measurable, not something I just postulate. It's not a free parameter, it's something measurable. It's all given from the equation. So the this is production equal to the W times S. Now, so if you take a ratio of the two terms, this is the first kind of order function, is a ratio term, P, and the ratio is going to reflect this thing that here, next plot comes in. That order function, ratio of production to dissipation, plotted in direction. You see the difference? This. These are the point that the same location as we. It's the same location. All right. So you notice correspondence. So therefore, with this order function, we can define the sublayers in a quantitative way. There's no room to mix. Now come to the second kind of the order function of the second kind. The second kind typically is length function. Now length function is extended from time. The best example will be Kolmogorov dissipation length. Eta goes with Reynolds number of 3/4. That's a similarity relation. Okay, but I'm saying generically the length scale we constructed will all have a scaling property. So that's why we regard mixing length is defined this way. This is not a model, Grisha, this is not a model. This is W square root W over S. That's how people define a function. On the numerator it's an average quantity, a statistical quantity. This is the ratio of two statistical quantities form the mixing length. And there is another shear driven dissipative length, which you take the additive viscosity is defined by the Lm squared times S. Q over epsilon. That is just like the Kolmogorov length scale, but taking the any viscosity instead of the usually molecular viscosity, and that transmits to W3 S3 epsilon. That's a very fixed combination. Now it turns out this length scale reveal the inherent structure of the problem. All right, so we'll just illustrate this to just for a step. So this is the rigorous balance equation here, all three terms there. But in the near wall, the approximate relation is just this. And so there is a group out there, 3/4. That's from Taylor expansion can justify that. And in the buffer layer, going a little further, approximate equation is this. It now have the additional term coming in. And this actually dominated over that term and generated the power 4. So we will predict that there is a power 2 here. That's about it. And any further to the so-called log region, the log region has the LM, actually the approximate balance equation become this. And you have the group, and you get this. So the now do a dilation. Dilation not only you do LM, which is this quantity, but you also do a LM prime derivative. Here, sorry that you probably don't see the prime very well here. We should use a different way. It's derivative. So you have a gradient, the LM and a gradient LM. So you have an invariant associated with LM. Also, you have a second invariant associated with the gradient. Now we think about the relation between the two. In a normal one scaling state, that's the relation here. This gamma zero will be the scaling exponent. So in the normal one scaling state, this is the relation, and we were just going from here to here. Add one more term here inside. This I can talk a little bit last time. But this relation here is translated into a differential equation on the phi and y. So this we call the GIE, generalized invariance equation. So that is the main postulate. And this is the main postulate that to generalize a new invariant. The new invariant will be x2 over the everything here put in the denominator. That'll be invariant 1. So we're claiming that this divided by the whole thing is an invariant. And that invariant is the same for every layer. Every layer is 1. So therefore, we have a global invariant. So major assumption will be that there is a global invariant there, and there is some good prescribable form of this, just involve just two terms. That's a postulate. All right, if you do this, this is the single solution, single layer, and this is the generalized solution. But generalized solution, it's actually this solution is written this way. 1 plus there's a y and there's an exponent here. So later you will notice that we have a bunch of structures in our model. So actually, because we find the new invariant, the new invariant is the same for phi 0, 1 to n. So actually the product of that is the whole invariant. It's also invariant. So in that shot, what we have done is that instead of Pronto ask us to do two matching, inner solution, outer solution, and matching. What we try to do is we see that there's multiple layers. In the inner solution, there are also several sublayers. So what we have to do, we have to do a matching for each of those. So actually the invariant is what you created for the matching condition. So with this form, there's no difficulty for the matching. It's matching is automatic. That's all. It's guaranteed the matching. So the matching is providing a very strong constraint on how the multilayer actually have to lay one above the other. All right, so much about theory that what the experiment can tell us. What we actually postulate is that is x2 over x1 is a very important quantity. You have to, so that translates to d log phi d log y. Phi is our old function. here is Lm. So if you do a d log Lm, d log y, you're going to discover those local scaling. That's what we claim. Look, this is the data. The circle is the channel flow data actually performed by our Japanese friend, Iwamoto and this group. Wonderful data. They put on the website, on the internet, so we just download their data. We do this calculation, you see there's a prediction of 3/2 minus 1/1/2. By the way, the function we plot here, there's also subtract 1 after. So you see 1/2, 0.5 here, this is 1 here, and this is 0 here. It's there. Now, let's take also a check of the solution of this function. In our generalized equation, we postulate a functional for this one, said that we have to solve the equation. So we solve the equation for the first layer. First layer is this red one. This is the approximate solution. So you see the approximate solution, how that nicely connect one with the other. And the local solution for the second layer is approximately written this way, the n is a parameter, n equal to 4 or 5. This is the blue, this is the red one, and that is the blue solution, it's from here to here. And they are beautifully matching in between because they are guaranteed by this generalized emergency equation. They're guaranteed, so the matching is automatic.
Right. What order in the derivative?
Say again?
You have to fix some number of derivatives which are matching. Mm-hmm.
No. There is, okay, you have to switch the mind a little bit. We are not doing a traditional matching at all. What we are saying is that we postulate the analytic structure. That analytic structure will do the matching automatically. It guarantees the matching. We don't have to do any matching. Because the generalizing invariant is one. It's everywhere is one.
How do you decide on the region where it matches?
Well, that's what the multi-layer, the first order function will tell you, that this is the layer. And then you postulate the local scaling state. I did this local scaling state analysis earlier. So I got this 3/2, 2, and 1, it's all worked out. And this is a verification by the data. Okay? And if you get, and the only free parameter is n here. Is n is the transition sharpness. How sharp I go from here, I can go poof. N is very large. Or I go very smoothly, go there. N equal to 2 is a generic one. All right? So, okay. Bulk flow. It turns out the bulk flow is also one of the generalized solutions. 1 minus z to the power 4, 1 minus z to the power n is a generic solution of the generalized equation. It works for the pipe bulk flow, and this is for the pipe, and this is for channel. You have beautiful plateau here.
What's plot?
Plot is the mixing length over the 1 minus z to the power 4. And this one, for the pipe data, you can plot it either against the 1 over z to the power 4 or 1 over z to the power 5. This is 1 power z to the power 4, and this is 1 power z 5. So the 5 works much better than 4. Now that's a little departure here, translated into theory, which is 10% of differences in the central velocity and in the mean velocity.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand well. So basically, you're saying that you are having an analytical formula for the whole things.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Then you have different pieces.
Well, the different pieces are constructed under this whole idea. Different pieces are all have the same structure. Different pieces have the same structure. Look this structure here.
That's non-analytic, no? It's,
yeah, this is a solution of GIE. Oh, there's a form.
You are asking the derivatives, how do they behave?
Yeah.
Their jumps and so on.
Yes, are there singularities in your analytic functions?
Yeah.
Oh, no singularities. Yeah. I mean, this so far is not nothing singular here. Nothing singular here. Yeah. Well, we can talk about details.
It's not so clear from the equations that there are no singularities.
Oh, but this is for statistical equation here. Statistical equation that no mathematical analysis has ever been done, and it's not possible to do anything. This is not on the primitive Navier-Stokes equation here. It's already ensemble average.
It's much simpler. It was just if you take this form and you take higher order derivatives, higher and higher, you plot them, are there any jumps? So that.
Oh, you mean higher order derivative?
He was asking.
Okay.
You know,
postpone. This is not an important question.
Okay. Question everywhere.
Yeah.
So
but
the analytic function everywhere.
Yeah. This is a side question. Okay. So eventually the form you see the form here. Every pieces are the junction of the two layers. Every piece is a junction of the two layers. And from the LM, you can readily calculate S. From the equation is quadratic equation. So from the S, you can compute the mean velocity profile. From the mean velocity profile, you can compute the average velocity or the center velocity. It turns out in the pipe and the channel, the center velocity and average velocity is a constant apart. So, but, guys, here, there is a little different integral here to do. And you notice the differences here, the median. And finally, the friction factor is defined by the mean, by the average velocity over the whole pipe, or over the whole channel, from the wall to the square.
I mean, but I still need these regions, right?
Well, regions.
So if I now decide there's only four instead of five,
right?
At the end could be.
You check your prediction against the result to see whether four is better than five. That's the how theory is doing.
So can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Is there a similarity between your approach and what is called the bachelor fitting of structure?
We derive the bachelor fitting.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing. So it's
well, not the same kind. I'm sorry, there's no Lie group here. It's not the same kind. We claim that when people actually, we explain why people, the interpolation formula works so well. Well, that we explain, because behind there's a generalized invariant for the two state. That's what we explain. And you can actually say that we generalize their thing into more theoretical forms. All right, but the bachelor interpolation actually, this theory can easily adapt to the energy spectrum, the structure function, which goes connect from the initial range to the dissipation range. You are absolutely right. And we did that. We did that, actually, I reported this in the Göttingen. I reported in the Göttingen, actually, that but then we didn't publish anything, but this, okay. Well, we can do a multi-layer. One nice thing about this, I have to tell you, this is a, one nice thing about this, this formula is that it's easy to do approximate calculation. Because each time, only one layer dominate. So if you have integration to do, you know how to approximate it. So this gentleman just do everything in hand. So we got all the LM worked out for each layer, approximate the relation. So you can, in each layer, you have analytical formula for S, for U, for everything. So this you can calculate this UM, you have the UM. So basically the constant you can calculate, this is a textbook constant. But for the first time you can calculate it. But there's a physical parameter, you see what the physical parameter finally is. There are two parameters. One is the sublayer thickness. That is measured. That is not I give, it's measured. And also buffer layer thickness. Buffer layer thickness is where the transition goes from the layer to log layer. It's the end to the log layer, 41.5. This is all measured from DNS data, from the channel flow DNS data. But we didn't have any clue what's in the pipe, and neither have any idea what is the rough pipe. So next one could be called predictions. All right, so this is 43 and 4.6, the number you find in textbook. Oops, what's wrong with this plot? Oh, here it comes. Okay. with LPR. LPR, three gentlemen here in the PRL 2008. They have a wonderful profile, actually, looks pretty good. But if you look at the what we call the sensitive indicator function, gamma. Gamma is du dy times y. So log layer will have a constant. If you look at this function, that you'd see that the red is the LPR, and the blue the blue one is ours. So these are DNS data. So they are pretty off in the center. All right, so we correct that. This is the pipe flow. Pipe flow, there are two data. The Princeton super Wu and Moyen simulation is the circle. The circle. The line is our prediction. These squares are the Princeton super pipe data. But they are approximately the same Reynolds number. They are not exactly the same Reynolds number because the Princeton data is not the. So this get the. But what is more interesting is that look at.
Why does the model compare with the theory and not the experiment?
Huh?
Why would you compare the model with the theory? With the simulations, with the DNS?
What I claim is that the theory here we talk about describe both DNS and experiments.
No, I understand that, but yeah. When you compare, I'm just as an experimentalist, I always find it interesting that somebody would compare the DNS and not the experiment.
Both. I mean, we have
but
to.
No, I mean, when you put in your model, the blue curve sits straight on the DNS.
Oh, because you know.
You cannot find.
But you see here, there will be measurement problems here near the wall. Everybody knows that, but you know. But let's. Well, I'm not saying anything. That was my question.
So you say
I put all three together here and let you guys suggest.
Where does the blue curve come from now again?
The blue curve is the theory. Is what I just described.
You need these two numbers. So you still need
yeah.
two numbers, which you took from the simulation.
But the two numbers are taken from the channel flow.
Also from the channel.
Yeah. But here is 1 minus z power 5 is the new structure. It's different from the channel flow. Just do that. And just do that for all Reynolds number. That was the same small Reynolds number. It's 1,000. Here is a Reynolds number to 500,000 now. The central velocity you see is pretty. But this is the most impressive one is this one. People have measured the central velocity for a long time. This is the channel one. Channel flow simulation. And these circles are the pipe experiments. There's one little curve. The one is from the Moyen simulation here, one point. But every others are Princeton super pipe data. But there's departure, this the 10% difference of the two. No one has explained. And we did. So these two curves are the theoretical predictions of the model. And the parameter, there's no parameter here. Again, that YM and YC is fixed by the channel flow simulation. After that, there's nothing to adjust. So now you can do all the calculations to the log law for the friction coefficient for the channel flow. You can derive all this log and arctangent and log and arctangent, everything. And you can do this for the pipe. And pipe actually has, you know, the you see the structure difference? For the channel, you have only this 1 over Reynolds number. For the pipe, you have 1 over Reynolds number and 1 over Reynolds square. But you have, for the pipe, because R of S integration, it's a little bit more messy, but it can be worked out. And this is the usual people do the friction for the Reynolds number. And this dashed line is the Prandtl's formula in 1933 formula. And it's amazing.
So amazingly for the Reynolds number, they both are off about the same amount.
But let's watch another plot. Let's divide this by the Prandtl's formula. Let's see. This is you compensated by the Prandtl formula. You see here, Prandtl works very well, and here, there's systematic departure here. Mm-hmm. So you could actually use your Prandtl's formula works also very well with the Göttinger experiments at that time. So it's low Reynolds, right? It's all at this end. And but this red curve is our theory.
Now, is that the division of the previous curve with the Prandtl result? Could you just show it again? The one before.
Which one? This one before.
So the red curve is significantly above the dots. So if I divide both with the same curve, the red curve must still be significantly above the dots.
Yeah. That's exactly.
But it's not, because the last point, well, okay, so.
That's exactly this. You divide this. This is a one here.
Here. About the dots in the red curve. So here, well, they are, it is above, but it's difficult to.
Could you say again? What do you mean?
The very last point agrees. You see, the last point, actually, the red curve goes straight through.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Well, almost.
Your eyes is very sharp.
That's definitely different on this.
The circles
are very different on this picture.
But the common thing, the problem is...
I don't want to use microscope on this.
It's much, much clearer. And finally, rough wall. We can work out everything for the rough wall, and only simple model for the rough wall is that the thickness, the buffer layer thickness, is altered by the roughness, and with the critical length depend on the sublayer. You know, when the roughness is bigger than the sublayer, it's already wiped out all the original hyping vortices and everything at the origin there by smooth wall is all wiped out. So just a simple model like this. Here is the red curve. This is all the Nicolas data with the ballet. Of course, you have to stop here. This is Lorenzo Zimmer. And this is the prison data. That's last prison data. Now, all this written in an analytic function here. So now when you notice that if you take the smooth average velocity minus subtract the rough velocity, which is called defect velocity, is that how much my roughness create slow down, and that is the scaling function. That is the scaling function. U smooth minus U rough is claiming to be just a function of S plus. S plus is S times the Reynolds number, the wall-based Reynolds number, which is the thickness of the Prandtl's boundary layer. Only thickness of the Prandtl's boundary layer is involved. So there's no fancy RE of power of 3/4 or whatever. And that is SRE tau. And this is thanks Eberhard to bring my attention to Prandtl's 1933. This was the collapse at that time. Mm-hmm. That was the new collapse here. And there is a curve here, which is this function here. This is the golden field collapse. It's still there's kind of scattering here. I think there are much less scattering here. And besides this function itself, F times Reynolds number 1/4, what's the physical meaning of this? It's unclear. But here is very, very clear. But put the last word on this is that because it's collapsing, I think the wall, the roughness generates the wall disturbances to the whole floor and let everything rescaled according to it. I think that makes a stronger theoretical argument on the log-log, preference on the log-log. The fact that it collapsed shows that the argument is valid, is better, so log-log is better. And so actually power law is at best is some portion of it. It has to be connected with other power law anyway. So therefore, power law the power law theory recently, that we have to let the exponent change with Reynolds number. So anything has to change. So why don't we just, so here is the conclusion. So Prandtl boundary layer theory for Wolbachian turbine flow, I think it's quantitatively constructed. And we have identified a generalized Lie group invariant characterizing the multi-layer structure of Wolbachian turbulence. And this formalism allows us to obtain from channel flow DNS data, only channel flow DNS data at low Reynolds number, not very high Reynolds number, a set of key quantities, and then construct solutions for all Reynolds numbers. And this procedure is likely to be applicable to other flow systems. Currently, we are doing that for the compressible and incompressible turbulence boundary layer. And successful prediction of the series of quantity for smooth and pipe flow. I think in particular in Lightning, because it reveals the merit of capturing some generalized invariant structure behind, some theoretical structure behind. So we interpret this as an effective mean field theory, which have the symmetry constraint on it only, which are able to actually derive all the sort of spatial profiles and how the profile have to change. So that's concludes my.
Can you just go back a couple slides to the comparison? I mean, you mentioned that on the Goldfell result here, that there's no physical basis for this.
Reynolds number RE of 1/4 and R of D Reynolds number of 3/4. There is some vague argument on this, but not anything on this.
But you could also argue that, I mean, what is the physical basis? Yes, you have. I mean, you have different layers of your formula.
The physical meaning is this.
I want to mention, I want to emphasize, you've got two free parameters there, where he doesn't. You've got these two measured numbers, 0.46 and 0.78.
Wait. There are two different stories here. Two different stories here. One story is the collapse itself. Collapsing itself, just the U, is take this U smooth minus U rough vertically. And horizontally is S plus, is the S time divided by the Prandtl's boundary layer thickness. That's it. And put all the data on, and that's a collapse.
Okay, so the fact you get a collapse is certainly interesting. And
but the collapse, that you talk about no free parameter, is the collapse has no free parameter. Here is collapse, but Nigel has never tried to write down the function for that. You are seeing the free parameter is what I write down the function for that.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Right. Collapsing has no free parameter.
Right. I understand. That's a good point.
But the physical meaning means this: is that physical meaning is that the quantity you describe, what is the physical correspondence? It. I say here vertically is the defect velocity, is the amount of velocity created by the roughness. That's the velocity is a physical quantity. There's no physical quantity called F times Reynolds number 4/3. There's no physical quantity for that. Friction is has a physical quantity, not times Reynolds number 1/4 power. That's the physical quantity, is that there's a velocity. This is a velocity here. It's a defect velocity, all right? That's a yes?
Can you go back a couple of slides before where you have the formula with the product of...
Yeah. Yes. This probably.
This one is.
Yeah.
So can you just give an idea of so the things as far as I understood, the things that have to be fitted are YC, YM.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
How do you get the powers?
Okay. So the power.
Where is the invariant? That's
what. Right. Okay. The exponent come from, for example, this 3/2. Okay. That's the local analysis, and that is the 1/8 over 4 is 1/2, add to the 1/3 is 2. So there's, if I estimate the next is 2, then only this is a parameter here. 4 is a parameter. Okay. Now next is this 1/4 is 1, give you minus 1, create a linear behavior. Mm-hmm. And so this is not a parameter, but the 4 is a parameter. 4 is a sharpness transition. Okay.
The 4 which is changing.
Right. These local scalings should be estimated by other means. But what I want to emphasize is that before you know it, you can actually always look at the empirical data to inspire from there, which is good. Now this five, the five is the local scaling exponent. And this is z of minus 1/2 here. This is a theoretical result, okay? This is not the fitting. But only the sharpness what we fix typically 4 and 5. Okay, so that is a, but the result depend weakly on that because this is only the sharpness. Yeah, why the sharpness.
Why is it 4?
4 is just the, it's not I too sharp.
But why is it not 6 or something?
Well, 6 is even sharper, yeah. Which the DNS doesn't seem to fit
how
with that.
Pick 4?
So it's a fitting. You can call it a fitting. Fitting parameter.
There's a parameter there.
There is, but this fitting parameter is, if you do all the calculation that he did, that dependence on this parameter is very weak. Because when you do the local approximation, they disappear. Local approximation is when this is big, this 4 and the 4 cancels.
Of course it does.
And so that's why it's weaker. It's just a theoretical sort of.
The sharpness of the crossover.
Exactly, the sharpness. The sharpness maybe also have some physical meaning. I don't know yet. But it's so far, that's the whole story. Now this transitions. Oh, by the way, I do miss a point, okay. This is Z0. Z0 is the 0.27. So it's one quarter of the distance from the center that the production mechanism switches. The mean shear production is replaced by the convective production, and that we don't know how to estimate it. I have already a theory for YC, but I don't have a theory for YM and Z0. So the transition point eventually will be predictable by the theory, but we don't have enough elements now yet. So they are just measured, but they are measurable. They're measurable from the experiments, from the DNS data. Yeah.
These exponents that you were just talking about when you did it,
yeah.
you kind of chose the nearest integer value.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, do you think that there's a theoretical basis for that someday someone will be able to derive these exponents?
Well, that will require some theoretician's effort.
Why you pick nearest integer values?
So far, I that was not the priority question I'm asking myself. But I would first love to see that how this generalized structure works for different flows. How large that sort of general structure? Yeah, but maybe when I retire, I'll come back to think about that. But we had actually some wonderful simulations with very coarse-grained simulations constrained by this and get to the CFD computation going now. Because
so the point is, your point is, once I have this LM function,
yeah,
then I can derive the rest.
Yeah, this is a.
Once I fix that function, the rest comes out correctly, right?
This is for the rest. The
point is, once I have picked LM,
right.
Done.
Yeah.
This is it.
That's right. But the determination of the LM, actually, I was a little bit skipped too fast. LM, I mentioned L nu and theta mu. Actually, LM is determined from L nu and theta mu. The theta mu, there's an exact relation LM equal to L nu times theta mu of power 1/4. So there's an exact relation there. So the full determination of L nu requires a good understanding of the energy dynamics. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. All these transitions, without considering energy dynamics, there's no way to guess it. People cannot just stay at the momentum level to see across a closure relation between Reynolds stress and shear, and that there's no way to.
So in other words, it's not if I turn this all around.
Yeah.
Then I can calculate the turbulent viscosity.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a function.
Absolutely, that's
a function of the wall.
Yes, 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 yes. Exactly. So they give all the wall functions. So that's why you will get to the CFD model immediately, and I think this is generalizable too. But my big step now is to talk about the separation, separate the flow. If I achieve that, I think I can separation if I did it, but with pressure. Yes.
Yeah. So the amazing thing with these turbulent shear flows is that the friction factor goes on decreasing
right.
the Reynolds number.
Yes.
So from your engineering things,
yeah.
Do you get an insight on this point?
Yeah,
question?
That's why
is it decreasing?
Oh.
Why is the friction factor increasing?
Oh, the friction factor is increasing simply because the boundary layer just shrink. But the way they shrink it is very, it's shrink like 1 over Reynolds number. But at the same time, you have the, yeah?
I mean, this is the Prandtl.
Yes, Prandtl is absolutely right. We have, what we have done is to show that Prandtl is more right than it appeared. And Prandtl has laid out this, but we are saying that actually there is a theoretical apparatus that can be derived all the inner solution and all the outer solutions, but always matching. Basically, I will say that I derived the general matching function, matching condition, that's all. Which seems to be okay, both for smooth wall, for rough wall.
Okay, so if I now take a turbulent drag reduction, I take now polymers, and I can apply the same.
Absolutely.
What I have to do is I have to find my plateaus. And
right. Exactly.
And then I'm deriving the new effective law for this.
Exactly. That's the effective field theory. That's basically what I mean by this. There's a whole very systematic procedure to follow on. And if you have any fluctuation data, DNS or whatever, even LES, you can just go ahead and to do all this plot and to discover local scaling state. And then the apparatus tells you how to do the interpolation. And then connect the one with the other and have a global solution.
But this is when you have these clear regions, right? I mean,
yes. It sounds very general. So thanks, ITP, to give us this opportunity to finish this the last two punch points, which is very grateful to you guys, Grisha, Eberhard, and okay. All right.
Thank you.